You're listening to the North Carolina Reading Service, broadcasting from Raleigh, North Carolina, serving the blind and print-impaired community since 1983. This is Nancy Jones. For the next hour, I will be reading to you from the May 2024 issue of Vanity Fair magazine, which features Chris Hemsworth on the cover. This is Vanity Fair, Part A. Here's this month's letter from Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief. In the photo, Radhika Jones, photographed by Mark Seliger at the 2024 Vanity Fair Oscar Party. In October of 1982, at age 22, the actor Dominique Dunn was strangled at her home in West Hollywood by her former boyfriend, who had abused her before. She lay in a coma at Cedars-Sinai for 5 days, with no hope of regaining consciousness, until her grieving family made the wrenching decision to take her off life support. The following spring, Tina Brown, who had come from London to New York as a special consultant to the newly relaunched magazine Vanity Fair, met Dominique's father, Dominic Dunn, at a dinner party hosted by the writer Marie Brenner. Dunn was then working on a novel about a society murder. It would become The Two Mrs. Grenvilles. And that evening, he spoke movingly about Dominique's death and mentioned he was going to L.A. for the trial. Brown recounts their conversation in her memoir, The Vanity Fair Diaries. Marie told him he should think about keeping a diary. It might be a solace, a way to process the pain. I said if he did, it's something I'd love to publish in Vanity Fair. His face lit up as if I'd just thrown him a lifeline. He seemed buoyed up when he left the dinner, as if he'd glimpsed some redemption from all his suffering. Justice, a father's account of the trial of his daughter's killer, appeared in the March 1984 issue. Dunn instantly became a signature voice of the magazine, where he covered high-profile trials for decades, from Claus von Bülow to O.J. Simpson, as well as other remarkable splashes, like finding Imelda Marcos in exile and reporting on the months-long inquest into Princess Diana's death. 40 years after Dunn's original dispatch from Dominique's trial appeared, we are publishing another family member's account of her killing, a heartbreaking excerpt from her brother Griffin's forthcoming memoir, The Friday Afternoon Club. Griffin, a director, producer, and actor, was in New York City when Dominique was attacked, and he remembers the last inconsequential words he'd spoken to her on the phone a couple days before, and those devastating hours at the hospital, where the family had to enter through an alternate route to avoid the photographers camped out in front. In a cast of outsized characters, including his uncle John Gregory Dunn and Aunt Joan Didion, Griffin reminds us of the intimacy of tragedy and its irrevocable effects on a family. He captures the surreal intertwining of oceanic grief and petty grievances that he, his parents, and his brother navigate as they begin to let go of their beloved Dominique. And he marks another death, the death of his prior self, when he writes that after losing Dominique, whoever I'd be in the days ahead would never be the person I was. Also in this issue, we look back at a particularly celebratory Oscar night, with a lot of terrific movies on the slate and a revitalized Hollywood out on the town. At the Vanity Fair Oscar party, contributing photographer Mark Seliger set up his portrait studio to capture the night's big winners and all the starry guests who came to toast them. We feature some highlights in these pages, and if you want a deeper dive, I humbly recommend our recent book collaboration with Mark, Vanity Fair, Oscar Night Sessions, A Decade of Portraits from the After Party. Thank you. Here are some of the contributors to the issue who are also pictured. Nick Riley Bentham, while there's often a sense of joy palpable in the Vanity Fair contributing photographer's work, his day photographing South African singer Tyla was at another level. Everyone danced the day away in formation, Riley Bentham says, on a high-energy set graced with the presence of the musician's new puppy. Griffin Dunn, Devil's Eve, 1982. The director, producer, film, and television actor and nephew of the late Joan Didion is often asked if it was difficult to write about himself and his family in his forthcoming memoir, The Friday Afternoon Club, published by Penguin Press. Dunn's largest obstacle proved to be finding a satisfying ending. Most everyone is gone, but they seem to come alive on my laptop. I had to say goodbye all over again, he says. Karen Valby, of Gods and Men. I was very moved by the man beneath the movie star, says Valby, who lives in Austin, after being led into Chris Hemsworth's world. That included time spent not only with the actor, but also his wife, daughter, parents, and one of his brothers, plus dogs and horses. Valby's latest book, The Swans of Harlem, published by Pantheon, about a sisterhood formed between pioneering black ballerinas, is available now. Gregory Harris, of Gods and Men. The New Zealand-born photographer knew he was in for a good time with Hemsworth. Both men share a love of fatherhood and extreme sports. Plus, there was plenty of Kiwi-Aussie banter to be had. Still, a shark on set almost took the shoot off course. Chris just wrestled it into submission like two brothers who haven't seen each other for ages, Harris jokes. Pretty sure they'll stay in touch. High Tide, a hit single, was only the beginning for the Grammy Award-winning singer Tyla by Brett Hinemuth. With opening photograph of Tyla by Nick Riley Bentham. Tyla, the 22-year-old mononymous sensation, is climbing the charts and riding the global wave of South Africa's Amapiano rise. First, an earworm single, Water. Next, a self-titled debut album. The Joburg local promises to be the sound of summer after snagging her first Grammy Award earlier this year. Cher tapped me on the shoulder, Tyla gushes about Grammy Week. She knew me. When her first solo tour launches, so will everybody else. She grew up listening to Stevie Wonder, Boys to Men, and Brian McKnight. Music is a huge part of the family. We are very, very close, and whenever we come together, we are singing and dancing. My gran was a singer in her day, and this was always the plan. I knew since the beginning. Everyone knew. She said yes to every opportunity to perform. Talent shows, soirees, I'd do Adele, Miley Cyrus, Whitney Houston. And ever since she arrived in a recording studio in high school, she's hardly left. I've been figuring out what I wanted to sound like, who I am as an artist. I've definitely made terrible songs while doing that, but all those mistakes got us here. Thinking about Water reaching the number one spot on the R&B charts is so crazy. My best friend and I talked about it every single day. Remember 4-3 years ago where we were? From the outside, it may look like it's all of a sudden, but for us, it feels like the right time. Her family is proud, and her parents were her Grammy dates. When I won, I was in front of that mic with nothing prepared, but there was a sense of peace. When I got backstage, my mother crying, my father smiling, they came to America for the first time, and it was the best day ever. We were driving back to the house, blasting Water in the car, just so, so happy. The album may be a new sound for some, so she hopes listeners will come with an open mind. It makes me feel good, and I just hope it does the same for everyone. After an injury, Tyla's tour was postponed from spring to summer. She promises the extra time to prepare means it's going to be even bigger and better. Get ready.
Thank you.
Treasure Chest. An exhibition puts the jewelry of iconic hip-hop artist on display by Daisy Shaw Ellis. Try conquering my crown, and that's really very silly, Slick Rick rapped with characteristic insouciance in his song The Ruler's Back, 1988, a narrative that later nods to the smashin' fashion of Friends at a party. And he's pictured here. This month, the American Museum of Natural History's Ice Cold exhibition has that very crown on display, pictured here, along with pieces from the jewelry collections of Notorious B.I.G., Tyler, the Creator, and Nicki Minaj. The show, held in the Mignon Halls of Gems and Minerals, tracks the phenomenon of jewelry and hip-hop music as wearable trophies that signify success, affiliation, and reverence. All the artists were taking their cues from street culture, says guest curator Vicky Toback, and that ostentatious street-is-runway sort of thing. Prized items will include Nas's famed QB piece, a rose gold and diamond Rockefeller Records pendant by Jacob & Company, and two of Erykah Badu's grills by Lillian Shalom. A glittering symphony. Moving on to tennis. This from Keziah Weir. Big serves. A courtside love triangle leads a volley of tennis-attuned takes on screens, shelves, and runways. In the photos, Alida necklace, Gucci gilet, Nike sneakers, Bruno Cucinelli tennis backpack, Hermes beach rackets, Chanel hat, The Winner by Teddy Wayne, Sporty and Rich skirt, Swarovski tennis bracelet, The Tennis Collection, edited by Gustavo Fernandez. She'll have a fashion line, a foundation. She's going to turn her whole family into millionaires, muses Josh O'Connor's Patrick about Zendaya's Tashi and Challengers, Luca Guadagnino's sweaty, vibey menage a trois, costumed by Loewe's Jonathan Anderson. Racketers need not stop there. Peruse The Tennis Collection, published by Rizzoli, where Gustavo Fernandez delves into Museo de la Moda's fashion archives and Teddy Wayne's The Winner, published by Harper, for another spin on psychological courting dynamics. Then don a skirt set, head for the baseline, and raise a racket. Love, Love, Serena Williams' latest hit, Versatile Makeup for Every Day, by Laura Regensdorf. Pictured here, Williams in 2010. And Win Beauty Matte Lipstick, Mascara, and SPF 30 Skin Tint. Early on, playing on the pro circuit meant having to grow up in front of a camera, says Serena Williams, whose career kicked off at 14. When she began wearing liquid liner and lip stain for matches, scrutiny followed. People would always give me side eye. Why are you doing that? You're an athlete. In time, the tennis legend made a case for aesthetic flourishes. Now, with the debut of Win Beauty, she champions performance-grade makeup for off-court life. The 10-piece line is both clean and comprehensive, ranging from a stay-put tubing mascara to a lip and cheek pigment to an SPF 30 skin tint offered in 36 shades. Every detail is finessed, down to the W embossed into the matte lipstick bullet, taken from a personal font Williams created years ago. To her, the brand's chartreuse packaging is a symbol of ongoing evolution. I didn't like the word retirement, she says, of her 2022 departure from the game. Her tennis ball has simply bounced onto an Ulta shelf. Here's what's trending. Seize the day. S-E-A-S, the day. In Palm Royale, Apple TV Plus's sun-drenched comedy series, Maxine Simmons, Kristen Wiig, attempts to infiltrate high society in yesteryear Palm Beach. Secrets abound among this cast of characters, from the ladies who lunch to those who wait on them hand and foot. Nothing is as peachy as it seems. In the photos, Kristen Wiig sits poolside in Palm Royale on Apple TV+. Ride the Wave, Le Bon Bros, Number 4, The Miracle, Hairbrush and Coral, Rude Skirt, Low Sunglasses, Roger Vivier Shoes, Tory Burch Golf Pants, Pucci Yoga Mat, Versace Shorts, Soft Services, TheraPlush Overnight Repair Hand Treatment, Amelia Wickstead Dress, Richard Mille Watch, Lizzie Fortunato Cuffs, Todd's Shoes, Omaravica Queen Serum, Chanel Bag, and Westman Atelier Lip Suede Matte Lipstick in Lacquer. Vanity Fair, Agenda, Promotions, and Events. Event Series, Women Investing Time in Women. and some of the participants are pictured here. Audemars Piguet welcomed philanthropists, executives, entrepreneurs, and friends of the brand in events from coast to coast to celebrate mentorship among women. Hosted by Vanity Fair's editor-in-chief Radhika Jones and Audemars Piguet CEO of the Americas, Jenny Wright, the AP House New York City and the all-new AP House in L.A. opened their doors to dynamic duos to discuss the contemporary significance of supporting women. Here, illuminating conversations took place between trailblazing mentors and their mentees, including tennis great Serena Williams and Nuzette founder Daniela Pearson at AP House New York City, as well as interior designer Brigitte Romanek and Fetfully founder Gigi McDowell at AP House LA, all pictured here. Through invaluable attributes of entrepreneurship, education, and empowerment, these women's impassioned relationships were displayed and honored for all to witness. While guests may have arrived perceiving mentorship as a one-way street, they left understanding that everybody wins when impactful women join forces. On to books. Riot Act. Kathleen Hanna's memoir, Rebel Girl, takes readers back to a 90s punk revolution that feels just as urgent today, by Michael Calderon. In the photo, Kathleen Hanna performs on stage during a 2019 Bikini Kill revival concert in London. "So many feminist artists get erased," says Kathleen Hanna, who with her new memoir, Rebel Girl, My Life as a Feminist Punk, is determined not to be one of them. Hannah, 55, tells Vanity Fair she needed to sit down and turn her life into some kind of narrative to make sense of it. Her first draft clocked in at around 600 pages, a riot girl habit, she jokes, before she cut it down to size. Hannah, of course, has a lot to say, as Rebel Girl charts her trailblazing path as a leader of the 1990s riot girl movement and front person for Bikini Kill and Le Tigre, finding her voice in Xeroxed zines and on sweaty stages. Rebel Girl is Hannah in full, politically radical, funny, and fearless. She writes unflinchingly about her tumultuous childhood, male violence, and her battle with Lyme disease, while also recounting the night of drunken hijinks with Kurt Cobain, in which her writing on his bedroom wall inspired Smells Like Teen Spirit. Hitting the road here this summer, Bikini Kill's Revolution Girl style feels especially urgent in post-Roe America, where, as Hannah says, it's super depressing and maddening to still be fighting for reproductive rights. "I thought we just wrote a bunch of weird punk songs," she says, "and now that I'm older and I'm performing them, I'm like, these songs have effing legs." Keziah Weir writes on books, Six Pack, Big Love, Hidden History, and more novels and nonfiction. All fours. Miranda July, marking 9 years since her last novel, returns with unruly self-discovery. An artist starts a cross-country road trip, stops at a local motel, and begins a lusty creative awakening. Published by Riverhead. Empire World, following his best-selling Empire Land, Sathnam Sangera examines the long arms of British imperialism, from racial disparities on a Barbados beach holiday to indentured labor and the Red Cross. Published by Public Affairs. Another Word for Love. His mother's lipstick tattoo that smelled of rose and spit on a Coke can, his body's betrayal, his black community in L.A., Carvel Wallace's melodic memoir brims with care. Published by MCD FSG. Cinema Love. This tender, elegant debut from Jiaming Tang follows gay men and their wives from pickups at a 1980s Maui movie theater to loss and longing in New York City's Chinatown. Published by Dutton. The Light Eaters. Zoe Schlanger's captivating exploration renders a rich world of plants, weird fern sex, sagebrush chemical communication, scientific debates on flora intelligence, and more, published by Harper. The Paris novel. Stella decamps to the City of Light, and pungent goat cheese, chilled wine, garlicky snails, in this giddy escapist confection from Ruth Reichel, food writer par excellence, published by Random House. Afterglow, Claire Massoud's grandfather's handwritten memoirs gave shape to the opening scenes of this strange eventful history, published by Norton, set in Greece in 1940. Here, more inspirations. Noah Davis, the extraordinary painter who tragically died young, captured what life is like, the everyday and the imaginary both, the way ordinary experiences can be simultaneously familiar and strange. This is what I'm trying to do in fiction, too, to convey reality's many layers. Brighter Days, Emily Sande, 2022. During an unpaid leave from teaching in the spring semester of 2022, we were still emerging from the pandemic. It was a dark time, and I had to slog to get the manuscript written in the months that I had. Massoud listened to this song when I needed some light. Picnic at Hanging Rock, 1975. There's a section of my novel that's set in Australia in the 1970s, and I couldn't help but have in mind Peter Weir's cult classic, Massoud says. The Victorian mystery about an Australian girls' school came out when I was a kid at an Australian girls' school, and we were all obsessed with it. Now this from Daisy Shaw Ellis, Petal Pusher, with photograph by Peter Langer, Dior Fine Jewelry Brooch. Lily of the Valley has been a symbol of hope and good luck within France for centuries. The prolific and superstitious Christian Dior embraced it as his favorite, so much so that his first collection in Paris is said to have been shown amid bouquets of its bell-shaped blooms. It makes sense, then, that Victoire de Castellane and Kim Jones, creative directors of Dior Fine Jewelry and Dior Homme, respectively, drew upon the emblem for their collaboration on a unique piece of high jewelry for men. The delicate mother-of-pearl blooms, vivid malachite leaves, and glittering lacquer roots bring life and dimension to the brooch, and hopefully significant amounts of bonne chance to the wearer. And on to my stuff. Love-languaged. Designer Rachelle Ruska, whose affinity for embroidery-inspired sassy sweater brand Lingua Franca, revels in romantic details and Taylor Swift tunes. Style file, daily uniform. Besides loving cashmere, you would be shocked at how many pairs of jeans I own. For walking, Birkenstock classic sandals. Wrist candy, my vintage Cartier charm bracelet that my husband, Sean McPherson, adds charms to for special occasions. It is building the story of our lives together. Date night, I like to mix something fun over something proper. I absolutely hate wearing stilettos. The pain is a distraction to my evening. I prefer comfortable boots. I have 3 pairs from Ricky Nan. Outerwear, Marfa Stance. Self-care, current obsession, Beauty Bio Glow Pro. Holy Grail, Goop's Himalayan Salt Scalp Scrub Shampoo is one of the most luxurious things you can do for yourself that takes less than a minute. I have been using it for years. It makes me so happy. Perfume, I love mixing Aaron Rose de Grasse on top of an oil. Body care, Teta Harper Body Oil. Workout, Tracy Anderson. At home, something sentimental. When I was a young mother navigating postpartum depression, I was kidnapped by friends, not literally, to make artwork in the Montauk Cliffs, where we got married. The photographs with our painting over them from that time can be found throughout my house and are so special to me. Aroma, Pure Chaos, bottled from the McPherson family. On the walls, in our boys' room, we've used Andrew Martin's mythical land prints. In the kitchen, I'm not much of a chef, but our Japanese knife set and Alice Waters' hand-forged egg spoon stand out to me. For pleasure, reading Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. Listening to Taylor Swift, who isn't? Staycation, the Hotel Chelsea. Weekend getaway, Wyndham Ski. My favorite ski wear is Perfect Moment. Now this from Laura Regensdorf. Beachcomber for hairstylist James Pessis. Life in Costa Rica, Mary Surf, and Sustainability. With illustrations by Cynthia Kittler. As the go-to hairstylist for Chanel campaigns and Tom Brown runways, James Pessis understands the glamour and excess of the fashion world. That's why a 2013 shoot with Gisele Bündchen in the Costa Rican hamlet of Santa Teresa left such an impression. I was going surfing on my lunch break, he says. Pessis and his wife, Kimberly Norcott, ended up buying property nearby. When the pandemic hit, they stayed put with their young son, taking in the waves and sunsets. Pessis is attuned to the environment. I'll be paddling through the water and see a shampoo bottle passing me, which is why the duo has created Blue and Green, an innovative hair care brand with plastic-free packaging. It reflects their pared-down lifestyle in a place that draws a creative crowd. You have fishermen next to Maurizio Catalan, next to Camila Nickerson. Here on holiday, he says, it's super tranquilo. No one cares who you are. In the photos, Pessis and his son in Playa Hermosa for surf instruction. Andres Salas Zamora can get you on waves, whether you are a first-time beginner or an experienced surfer looking for the best spots. Ario Tours offers scenic horseback rides, Blue and Green shampoo tablets. A breath course with Augusto Carrera is a game changer for surfing. From San Jose, take a Costa Rica Green Airways charter plane to Cubana, then a taxi to Santa Teresa. For bikinis, trunks, flip-flops, and boards, you go to Kina's. Rent one of Rio Verde's villas and call in private chef Russell Taplin. I trade him haircuts for vegan cocoa passion fruit tarts. Wake up with House of Shakti Yoga and get breakfast at Monteraya or head to Indigena Cafe, which taps into local cacao culture with a lot of love and knowledge. Koji's turns the morning catch into incredible sushi, while Rocamar is the sunset hangout for drinks and tacos. This program is intended for a blind and print impaired audience. I'm Nancy Jones, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service and broadcasting from its studios in Raleigh, North Carolina. Vanity Fair Part A airs via special subchannel receiver on Saturday and Sunday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Vanity Fair Part B airs via special subchannel receiver on Monday and Tuesday nights at 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Saving Time, streaming via the World Wide Web at those times. Both Parts A and B are available as a podcast. Opening and closing music by Calexico. Interval selections by Mark Hoffman.